Mark 4, verse 30. Jesus said, "Whereunto shall we liken the kingdom of God? Or with what comparison shall we compare it? It's like a grain of mustard seed, which when sown in the earth is less than all the seeds that be in the earth. But when it is sown, it groweth up, and becometh greater than all the herbs, and shooteth out great branches, so that the fowls of the air may lodge under the shadow of it." The problem with this parable for the botanically minded is that mustard is a windblown weed and never grows into a tree with great branches. Jesus was killed because he was out of control. He was outside the control of political and religious institutions. He lived and taught and showed a disregard of borders, whether those borders were around who you should dine with or touch or put as heroes in your stories or how you picture God. He deliberately flouted them. His was a spirituality without borders, and the border police didn't like it. For around Jesus was gathered the morally and theologically poor, those not able to afford the slick, tidy packages on offer in the confident religious brands. Around him gathered nobodies, nuisances, and skeptics. Jesus welcomed, broke boundaries and bread, and loved. In the doing, in the being there was hope. It wasn't that Jesus was ignorant of the borders or just wanted to be kind to outsiders or promote tolerance. Rather, he set his sights on the nexus of ideological control, the Jerusalem establishment, and challenged the reason for its existence. He wanted to break the control system. He hoped that breaking would catch on. He hoped that what horrified the thought police would spread. He hoped, like that wild, windblown mustard seed, spiritual anarchy would grow, bloom, and seed like the weed it is, in every and any place, beyond the power of the elites. It was this vision that would get him killed. It was a bad Friday on Golgotha's Hill. In the years following his death, his followers caught the wind of his spirit, and the weeds of anarchy spread. On the edges of society, women and men, slave and free, all races, shared in leadership and resources. There wasn't a lot of control. One never quite knew what was going to happen. There were lots of good Sundays. Yet within three centuries, a new Christian religious institution with its bevy of rulers and rules had arisen, that not only took upon themselves to beat back that spread, but also to redefine Jesus. They sought to bring the Jesus movement back under control. And so a number of shifts, manipulations of the collective memory of Jesus took place. That spirituality akin to a wild weed was genetically modified into a tree with branches able to provide food and shelter to birds. An institution is like a tree, dependable, predictable, rooted. Jesus' vision was now akin to trees, not weeds, to stability, not dynamic change. The institutional controllers also split Jesus from the spirituality he taught and practiced. What became the mark of a Christian was not someone who lived that borderless, inclusive faith, but someone who believed that the former out-of-control Jesus was now elevated to the heavens, sitting at the right hand of the in-control God. The prodigal had been reined in. The controllers also concocted a system whereby people's fears could be played upon. Everyone was defined as a sinner. Only by correct belief could people be forgiven. Jesus' death had not been the result of the thought police. Rather, it had been everyone's fault, everyone's sin, which had required him to sacrifice his all. Only by repenting, believing in humanity's inherent unworthiness and Jesus' sacrifice, could people be forgiven. And thus, institutional Christianity took root and grew into a tree which prized purity of belief and obedient behavior. It was quite different from the wild weed. It's a mistake, though, to just blame others for what happened to the memory of Jesus. For in our fears and our failings, we often seek that certainty, those demarcations between pure and impure, and the forgiveness that a superparent God can offer. We want to believe that in a doubting, dirty, and messy world, there is absolution for us. So we create a parental God to fit. In most churches, at most services, there's a ritual reenactment of this Easter sin redemption bargain. It's called confession and absolution, and requires the congregation and priest to admit their failings, and then the priest on God's behalf to pronounce that through Jesus' sacrifice, we are forgiven. Many of us don't participate in this bargain ritual. We don't like what it makes God into. We don't like what it makes of Jesus' life and death. We don't like how it defines us, primarily as failures in need of forgiveness, instead of the deeper truth that we're made in the image of God. Yet there is, at the heart of this confession-absolution ritual, some ancient truth that still speaks. We do fail regularly. We are frail. We do doubt. We are afraid. The good news that bargain theology doesn't quite get is that these parts of our humanity are not to be shunned or confessed or disguised. Rather, they are to be embraced, held, and valued. For our wounds can be the source of our empathy. Our doubts can be the engine in our quest for truth, and our fears can be the wellspring of our pity. Though usually, of course, they aren't. Usually they're just part of the hand fate has dealt to us. The spirit of the borderless Jesus informs us of a God different from the superparent. This God holds, embraces, and values our doubts, dirt, and mess. In the windblown community of this God's followers, no matter what one does or doesn't, no matter how bound one is to one's addictions, no matter what one believes, if anything, all belong. The love called God makes room for all. Hope, therefore, is not what some cosmic being has bargained for us by having his favorite son killed. Hope is, to quote Richard Holloway, when the unacceptable are accepted by a community which knows itself to be unacceptable. At Easter, remnants of that windblown community gathered to celebrate that the spiritual path of Jesus did not end at the cross. Neither did it end when they elevated him to heaven and crowned him there. Instead, the spiritual path of Jesus, his life, lives on amongst all who reach beyond borders in the name of justice, compassion, and love. When freedom is celebrated, when bread is shared, when the constraints of certitude and dogmatism and fear are broken, then we know Jesus lives on. In the doing, in the being there, is hope. It's the hope of mustard weeds, spiritual anarchists, splashing the world in hot, vivid colors.